Now what you hear is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I'd like to say hello. To the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the ripple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang, bang, the boogie to the boogie, say up jump the boogie to the bang.
Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, September 18th, 2017, and the Green Bay Packers fell to the Atlanta Falcons Sunday night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Final score, 34-23. Tom Silverstein is here with me for this episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen. I'm sorry if it sounds like we're in a spaceship. There is some sort of weird humming noise coming from the press box that is still going, and I don't really know what it is, but maybe I'm just delirious, Tom, since it's so early in the morning here in Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, and we might as well be in a spaceship because that's what this stadium looks like. And it sort of felt like we were on a different planet the way things played out today. I don't think I anticipated the Packers being without their two starting tackles. And that turned the whole thing into a bizarre day as it was.
That's really where it started. So, you know, early during warm-ups, you know, once the inactives came out 90 minutes before the game, it was apparent that David Bakhtiari, Brian Bulaga would both be out. Bakhtiari dealing with a hamstring problem. Bulaga still bothered by that ankle and maybe some leftover traces of that illness that kept him out this week. And so what was really going on there with Bakhtiari? I know I saw you talking to him in the locker room.
Yeah, well, I figured that Bulaga wasn't going to play just because he didn't have enough time to get really to rehab his ankle. He had the flu for 2 days, and that kind of set him back. So that didn't surprise me. But Bakhtiari, at least from what we had seen in practice, was doing the individual drills.
Yep.
He was running through everything. And as it turned out, he really wasn't doing that much in team drills. He was just testing out his ankle each day. I'm sorry, I keep saying ankle. It's his hamstring. He kept testing it out, and then on Saturday he didn't practice at all. And their only hope was that he would come out and suddenly feel really good. But I think they knew Saturday that he wasn't going to play. They had worked Murphy at left tackle all week. And on Monday, after the Bakhtiari had injured his hamstring, they told, or Justin McCray went up to Campen and told him, you know, I played right tackle in college and I'll do whatever you want me to do. And so they worked him at right tackle. And, you know, that's not the offensive line they're going to go to the Super Bowl with. It's okay to try to go through with those guys for a game, 2 games, whatever. But if they're going to the Super Bowl, they got to have Bulaga and Bakhtiari back at tackle.
Yeah, so from left to right, you had Kyle Murphy, Lane Taylor, Corey Linsley, Jari Evans, and Justin McCray. And I think that if at the end of training camp, if you gave me 20 to 25 tries to come up with combinations of 5 guys that I thought they'd be using in week 2,
yeah,
after they made it through camp almost fully healthy, I don't think I would have come up with this one. And, you know, McCray in particular is somebody that I don't think I ever expected to start a game at right tackle. I remember on cut day texting you trying to figure out if this guy even made the team.
Yeah.
And then here he is starting it at right tackle. Now, if you knew both those guys were going to be out, would you have guessed that McCray was the guy they would have gone to?
No. No, because I didn't know about his right, him playing. I should have known that, but I didn't know that he had played right tackle in college. I thought he was a guard the whole time. That changed a lot. That allowed them, he is there right now with Spriggs out and Murphy starting. He's their 6th best offensive lineman.
No question.
And so that's what you do. You get your best offensive lineman on the field and find a way to do it in some combination, and that's what they did.
So how do you think that changed things for what the Falcons were able to do and what the Packers had to do to try and stop that pass rush, whether it was Beasley, Brooks Reed, Claiborne, any of these guys that they shuffled through there under Dan Quinn? How much do you think that changed things in the last, 90 minutes before kickoff?
I don't think it changed a lot. I think they had still planned on trying to get after Rodgers with their front four, maybe a little bit of blitzing. They didn't do a ton of blitzing,
as far as
I could tell. I think they were going to play coverage. And I think you saw in that first series that when Nelson was still in the game, they were going to have some success. They were going to be able to threaten Atlanta's secondary a little bit and also be able to run Montgomery. But I think once Nelson went out, they felt a little bit better about how they were going to be able to cover. And they just kind of took it to the Packers. And, of course, eventually Murphy and McCray had bumps in the road, and that was expected. And some of them resulted in some pretty big hits on Rodgers, and one resulted in a touchdown when he threw the backward pass at the start of the third quarter.
You know, when you look at the way that the Packers have to protect these guys, you know, they can do a couple things with keeping Montgomery in for extra protection. They can keep Ripkowski in. And I talked to Lance Kendricks about how it might have changed anything that he and Bennett were hoping to try and accomplish in this game. And he said, well, we practiced kind of knowing that there was a chance these guys wouldn't play. So the fact that we had to stay in and chip and things like that wasn't totally unexpected or anything that caught us by surprise. But what he said was that it essentially makes them less effective in the passing game, not necessarily just because they have to block, but because of that extra half second or second it takes to chip. When they were throwing a lot of these quick passes, if you have to chip, you can't get out and chip at the same time you turn around to try and catch a pass. So Lance said it kind of took those guys out of it a little bit, with the exception of when they split Bennett out wide. The one thing about splitting Bennett out wide that I didn't really expect, and maybe I should have going back to last year, I couldn't remember how they covered Jared Cook, but I was sort of impressed with the way Keanu Neal was able to match up with Bennett, and with the exception of maybe one or two plays that he gave up, he really had some decent success against a guy that has height and girth against him.
But Bennett doesn't have speed.
Exactly.
And that's what makes the big difference between him and Jared Cook. And I was all about Bennett. I thought he's a better player than Jared Cook, but I'm starting to wonder whether he fits as well as Jared Cook. I think they really need a down-the-field type of tight end. Now, they'll need Martellus Bennett in the, you know, when the weather gets cold, and they want to, if McCarthy ever gets a running game started. But today, you could see they need it. They were dying for a tight end. They were getting one-on-one coverage, and Bennett got one-on-one coverage, and he kept dropping balls. I mean, he must have had four drops.
Yeah, he definitely had three, and then there was a fourth that he got bailed out on that penalty call.
Yeah.
But it's really funny you mentioned that, because at one point in the third quarter, middle of the third quarter, I turned to Pete Doherty, our columnist, and I said, you know, if this continues to play out sort of like this over the next 3 weeks, it would be a pretty interesting column if you wrote about how, even though Bennett might be the more physically gifted player, that Jared Cook is a better fit for this offense and what they want to do. And, you know, you look at that formation where they split the tight end alone on one side and then the three receivers on the other, and that's where those slants with Cook were so devastating, because he had that quickness to get inside, especially after his ankle healed. And you didn't have that with Bennett. In terms of Rodgers and the way he played and the types of throws he made, did you see anything there that looked jarringly different without either of the tackles? Did you see happy feet or anything like that?
Yeah, I did. I saw him throw off his back foot. Now, he throws off his back foot a lot, but I thought he sailed a couple of balls that were completable, including one to Bennett along the sideline that he just... Bennett had a good matchup where anything that would have been within reach, he would have gotten. But Rodgers threw it off his back foot, hurried it, and sailed it over Bennett's hands. So I did see him with a little bit of happy feet. I also thought he held on to the ball too long a few times. You know, he's used to that. He's used to having that time, but he needed to turn his time clock back and just take some incompletions just to keep drives alive.
Now, I've only seen two seasons worth of games, plus, you know, the two from this year, and you've seen every game that Rodgers has played. But for me, in terms of the most physical abuse he's taken in a game, this ranks up there with that December trip to Arizona my first year here when Barkley was at left tackle and I think Calais Campbell just ate him for lunch. I mean, Rodgers took a lot of hits tonight, and he took some big hits tonight, too. Now, he finished the game, of course, but, I mean, that's a lot of damage for your quarterback to take. And if Bakhtiari is unable to go in the future, and it looked like from some of the quotes I read in your story, it seemed like he wasn't going to commit to playing next week.
No.
What do they do to try and not get Rodgers on his back every fourth snap?
Well, number one, if they can just get one of the two tackles back, they'll be okay.
Okay.
But let's just assume that they can't and that they have to go with Murphy and McCray again. I think they've got to find a way to isolate Ty Montgomery more. They did a pretty decent job of getting him in the passing game. He had a few decent runs, nothing spectacular early on. I think his long run was 7 yards. They really got to find a way to make him a threat, because there's no play action with them without a running game, and they need to do a lot of kind of off-balance things to keep the rushes from the rushers from just teeing off on them. And that's eventually what happened with Atlanta. They were cognizant of Montgomery early, but once the Packers couldn't run the ball, they just teed off. And they were coming at Rodgers in waves.
So we mentioned the injuries on the offensive line, of course. Let's sort of expand that a little bit, because this was an infirmary game for the Packers. I was in the locker room after the game, and Patrick McKenzie, the team doctor, came up to me and he said, "Hey, you did a good job today," because he saw me do an interview on the field before the game. And I said, "You were the one with the busy day." And he goes, "You weren't kidding." So you go down the list. Mike Daniels drops out with a hamstring. Jordy Nelson drops out with a quad. Kentrell Bryce with a groin. Jari Evans, groin. Randall Cobb, shoulder. Devon House, quad. Now, we've seen lots of games where guys get injured, but have you ever seen a game where this many star players get injured? I mean, that's literally every big name that they have, almost.
Yeah.
Gosh.
I mean, I have seen it, but that was pretty devastating. You know, that said, yeah, that was a lot of guys, but it was really Nelson and Daniels that mattered. Those were the only two that really mattered. Eventually, you know, the other guys went out kind of late.
Yes.
But Daniels and Nelson got hurt right away. And I think taking Nelson away hurt a lot. And then Daniels, their play against the run was terrible. And that, if they're going to be able to play that nitro with Burnett, they got to have Daniels. They got to have someone who can stop the run. Daniels is really their best run stopper.
And in addition to just struggling to stop the run in general, there were a lot of plays where, whether it was Coleman or Freeman, it didn't matter, they made cuts behind the line to avoid guys that actually got some penetration.
Yeah.
So I asked Kenny Clark, I said, "Well, what's the deal? How come you guys were able to get into the backfield on certain plays and just not tackle, because you actually tackled pretty well a week ago against Seattle?" And he said, "Well, sometimes there are just games like that, but more importantly, these guys just did such a good job of jump cutting in the backfield and getting away from any penetration that we had. And then once they got by the first wave, either the rest of the guys weren't able to get enough penetration to make up for it, or there were just missed tackles." I mean, did you see as many missed tackles as I did? It was not a crisp performance.
Yeah, I did. I sort of thought that they should have played it a little more conservative and not gotten up the field as much. Really, when you're playing a team that's a zone team like that and their running backs are looking for cutback lanes, you kind of just want to have your guys hold up the line, you know, and try to make the back force his cut. And they were just so aggressive that as soon as they got some push, the back just cut right behind them. And then the contain was terrible. I don't know what happened. You got to have some kind of contain over there. And they didn't tackle well. The inside linebackers didn't tackle well. When they were in nitro, they couldn't stop the run. It was a mess on defense. It really was a mess. Matthews had some really nice rushes early on, but he should have dominated that guy all game long. And I still don't know why they didn't give Perry some rushes on that side against the backup right tackle who came in.
That's where I was going to go next, is that, you know, this was the second game in a row where Perry lined up almost exclusively at right outside linebacker, and Matthews was at left.
Which is what he likes. Perry likes the right side. That's his better side. He gets most of sacks from there.
And so then the Falcons lost their starting right tackle to a concussion after a helmet-to-helmet hit with Devon House. And so then you had three of the four starting tackles not in the game for the two teams combined. But like you said, Matthews started to make plays against, you know, the backup right tackle for the Falcons, but Perry did nothing on the left side. Mm-hmm. He finished with two tackles, and I kept getting questions on Twitter, you know, does this mean Perry is a fraud? Does this mean that Mike Daniels is the only thing that keeps Perry successful? Because without Daniels, they don't have to double on the interior. What do you make of Perry really disappearing a little bit?
He just got outplayed by Jake Matthews, who is a very good left tackle. I think he just got swallowed up. And Jake Matthews had a really good game. Perry, you know, there's games like that you're going to have where you don't get a sniff. But that's where I think, okay, if you're not beating this guy's got your number, well, move him around a little bit and give him a chance to work on some other guys and give him a break. So I was surprised they didn't give Perry, or try to run Perry and Matthews off the same side, some kind of exotic thing to get after Ryan, because they really needed to put pressure on him. That was the only way they were going to stop him.
Now, I know that some injuries have played a part in this, with Ahmad Brooks being out with a concussion, and, you know, Kyler Fackrell is not injured, but it's a guy that they clearly don't want out there for a ton of snaps. With as much as Matthews and Perry are playing right now, is that a cause for concern at all that they're playing so many snaps this early in the season, both from an injury and a fatigue standpoint?
Well, it is a little bit, but you want them, when you're playing Seattle and Atlanta, two of your NFC teams, you want them out on the field a lot. You know, you're willing to push the envelope on that for two teams like this that you know you really want to play. Cincinnati, you know, then you can start to back off a little bit, but I'm sure their intention was to play them a lot against these two teams.
So let's move back to the secondary a little bit. There was a lot discussed about how they would try and cover Julio Jones. Had 9 catches, 180 yards, and 2 touchdowns in the NFC Championship game. So from what I saw, it seemed like they didn't track him with anybody, although there were times early in the game where it seemed like they were going to give Demarius Randle a chance to follow him in a couple different spots. Maybe not exclusively, but I saw Randle on him in the slot. I saw Randle on him out wide. And, you know, the short version of the story is that it didn't really matter. Julio Jones still did what he did. And what did you think of the way they tried to defend him?
Well, you know, they doubled him a lot. They put a safety over the top of him quite a bit. But I don't feel like Julio Jones beat them. I feel like Julio Jones had his typical game, 5 catches, 108 yards on 9 targets. I think what killed him were the other guys. I think
Sanu was really good.
Gabriel had some catches. Hardy had a 19-yard catch. Freeman had a couple catches out of the backfield. Yeah, Julio Jones hurt him early, but I actually thought once they put Kevin King on him, Kevin King actually did a pretty good job on
him. I agree.
But Sanu, the middle of the field was terrible. The slot guys played awful, absolutely awful. And I don't know what the problem is. You know, Demarius Randle started out there okay. So Rollins started, and he kept getting turned around. He just doesn't have the foot speed to compete with these guys, with the Atlanta receivers. Then Randle came in and replaced him, and I thought Randle had a couple of nice plays, but then he just lost discipline. And then it was kind of Katie bar the door after that. They couldn't stop Atlanta when they needed to. And then the last quarter and a half, they were just trying to kill the clock. So they could have had 500 yards easy if they wanted to keep passing.
I want to follow up on what you said about Kevin King. There were a few plays that I noticed where, you know, the type of physicality that he showed in some of the exhibition games seemed to transfer over. You know, there was a nice deflection he had with Julio Jones and a pass from Matt Ryan that was sort of like a back shoulder kind of throw into the end zone, and afterward King got up and Julio Jones got up and they sort of tapped each other on the butt or the helmet,
and Jones, I think, congratulated him on the play.
And then there was another play where Kevin King made a really nice tackle in the flat on a short pass to one of the tailbacks, which is something that Randall and Rollins have not done as successfully over the course of their careers. I mean, I know that, you know, he certainly gave up some things too, but I have to think that King was probably encouraged by what he was able to do today on certain plays.
Yeah, King and Josh Jones need to be on the field. They have to find a way to get those two guys on the field. Those are their future. I don't know about Randall and Rollins. You know, I don't want to make a statement after two games of their third year, but King and Jones are definitely the future of their backfield, and they got to find a way to get both. I think King's going to be a starter from now on.
And I'm not sold on Bryce either. There's some plays there that
he missed some tackles.
Yes, he did.
He got knocked around. I was not impressed with him at all. And I wouldn't be surprised if Josh Jones is starting there next week
in the Nitro.
And I think they have to give him some snaps near the line of scrimmage too. I mean, this guy can play the run. He's tough now. He's going to make some mistakes, but at this point, you know, you're playing on turf like this, you got to have some speed in there. You got to have some guys who are athletes, and their guys just did not compete very well.
What did you make of the three instances in which pick plays caused some controversy? There were two that were called offensive pass interference on the Packers, one that was not called on the Falcons that ended up being a touchdown. What do you make of that rule and just sort of the inconsistency week to week?
Yeah, I'm not really well versed in the rules. You kind of wrote on it. Why don't you tell me what you heard in the locker room from guys?
So first I wanted to ask the players for their explanation of what the rule was, and then I wanted to go back and look at it, you know, in the rule book and see if they were understanding it correctly, because sometimes these guys, the rules can get so complex that they might not even know all the different intricacies of things.
Right.
So I asked Lance Kendricks, I said, okay, what is the rule? And he said that you can, just about any contact is legal within 1 yard of the line of scrimmage. But then if you want to block somebody beyond 1 yard, it's not when the ball comes out of the quarterback's hands. It's actually when the receiver catches the ball. And that was something that I was unaware of. I thought it was once the ball comes out of the quarterback's hands, you can block. And sure enough, Kendricks was right. And so he said that's why it tends to be so difficult for a lot of these slot guys, because you can sort of keep one eye on Rodgers and realize when it's out of his hand, but you have no idea when it's being caught behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these guys are blocking, you know, and somebody is coming in behind them with a catch. And if you don't know when it's hitting their hands, you don't know exactly when to block. And so he said that was really the catch-22 for a lot of these slot guys.
Yeah, now that's on screens. You know, that's on wide receiver screens,
right,
that they're doing that. With Martellus Bennett, there's no question he's running a pick route.
Correct.
Trying to run a legal pick route.
Same with Allison's.
Where he's trying to rub a guy off with his route and allow, I think, was it Adams or Cobb?
That one was Cobb.
Yeah. And so those are two different things, because the one, you're looking to block a guy. You're physically looking to block a guy. The one that Bennett got called on with a pick, I thought he was just trying to run his route to make contact.
Is that, right.
Is that how he explained it?
I didn't hear what Bennett's explanation was on that route, but basically Geronimo Allison said what you did, which is that yes, the players technically have a route, but that route is designed not to go out and catch a pass. It's designed to be some sort of a roadblock in between the defenders. So basically what Allison said is that you're not supposed to reach out and make contact with the guy. And so you're kind of supposed to run and just get in his way a little bit. Mm-hmm. But what Allison did was he sort of leaned and put his shoulder into Brian Poole, the nickelback for the Falcons. And once he made contact, that's when the flag came out. Now, he still thinks he didn't do anything wrong. But based on what I read from the rule, what the guys said, and what I saw when I went back and watched it, if he had just run in that direction and not made contact and just sort of stood there, it would have been fine. Exactly. Yeah. And Bennett did the same thing. If he had just sort of stopped or slowed down. And so I honestly thought that those two plays were rightfully flagged. And then with the Falcons play, I think that one should have been flagged too, and it wasn't. And that's what made McCarthy lose a gasket on the sideline.
Well, I thought Hooper actually ran a route. That's what differentiated Bennett and Hooper.
Okay, you did. So you thought he was running a route.
I thought Hooper ran a route. And I thought Bennett did until he pushed the DB.
Okay.
You know, he came into him and or either pushed him or
thumped him with his chest. Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it was a little bit of an intimidation thing. And it was like, you don't need to do that. Just run the route. You're so big. Just stop. You know, just stop and turn. You know, I guess they need to be taught how to run those routes because they didn't do a very good job of it. Allison, I noticed, tried to come out of it
right away
and finish his route. So he did at least try to make it look like he was running a route. Maybe he just, you know, got out of balance or lost his balance. But I thought that in both cases, you've got to be better at how you run that route.
My only beef with the Hooper one is that it was very clear that when he ran into Burnett, Burnett was the one that was supposed to follow Tevin Coleman into the flat, and Hooper ran into him. And my thought is that even if he's running a route, if he's not supposed to clear out space for Coleman on that play, why would any offensive player run a route directly into the chest of a defensive player?
Well, for no other reason than to
exactly.
pick up.
So,
right.
So to,
but
to
that's
me, that,
okay. I mean, you can do that. You can run, just you can't make contact with him. You can. So why not run a route right to the guy and stop?
There was contact with Burnett and Hooper, so that's why I thought it was. Because Burnett is running sideways, and then Hooper hits him, and he has to turn his body to try and get around him.
Yeah, I thought Hooper was still. I don't know.
It's tough.
I need to look at it again. But Hooper, I thought, had at least was finishing his route.
Okay.
Like he wasn't aiming it and sticking a shoulder out. You know how they call that with picks and stuff in basketball? You stick your leg out or something.
Yep.
Whereas Bennett, I thought, tried to, you know, push the guy off of balance. I don't know. I'll look at it again, and we can talk about it later in the week. But
and these are hard plays, too, because you're essentially asking a human person to look in two different places at the same time.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's almost like a what did I liken it to in my story? The tag-up plays in baseball. Mm-hmm. The referee has to watch when the guy catches it and when the guy leaves the base at the same time. How do you put your eyes in two different places? It's tough.
Yeah, and the other thing is you don't see these called all that often.
Very true.
They called two of them, and I was surprised.
Adams
usually
was pissed.
They don't call it.
Adams was pissed. He said flat out, we get called on these more than any other team in the league. And he said, first of all, we don't do anything illegal, which, you know, he of course is going to say that. But he was really heated. For a guy that was involved in none of those plays, he was very heated and thought that it's directed at the Green Bay Packers, not necessarily just the plays themselves.
Well, they certainly were not going to get another call after McCarthy went bonkers on the sideline and drew a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. So, sort of like, you know, I guess in basketball you work the refs, but, you know, they definitely were not going to give him a break or the benefit of the doubt.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And McCarthy was asked about it after the game, and he said, I was looking for an explanation of the Martellus Bennett pick play, which happened two snaps before that touchdown. Mm-hmm. And he said, I was not given one, and that resulted in the penalty. So I don't know. I mean, again, it's another game where they go up against the Falcons, a team that I'm sure is going to be involved in the playoff picture. And regardless of the final score only being 11 points, this game was not close.
No, it wasn't. But, you know, reflecting on what I saw on the live blog from fans, you know, you have to keep every game, you have to have some perspective on what each game means. I never thought the Packers were as good as they looked against Seattle. I thought I was realistic in that they beat up on a bad offensive line and dominated. They just came in without their starting tackles. They lost their best inside defensive lineman. They lost their best wide receiver. And they were playing in the team's new stadium for the first game, a team that plays really well at home and on the turf. It exposed them and showed some things that they still need to address. But it's not like their season is over. It's not like the next time they play the Falcons, they have no chance.
No, definitely not.
Everything changes in the NFL, and the football in week two is not nearly as good as it is in week 12, 13, 14. The one thing I think that is concerning is what happens if they were to lose Bakhtiari and Bulaga both long term. They're not really equipped to handle that. And maybe no team is to lose its tackles, but it showed you a little bit about how scary that would be.
Definitely, and McCarthy said they still don't know how long Spriggs is going to be out. So that's another piece of this puzzle on the backup line.
And the other thing is, are Demarius Randle and Quentin Rollins ever going to be consistent? Are they going to give you something every game? I mean, how can Kevin King come into a game, play so consistent, and those two guys just be really inconsistent?
It's one of the questions that I think is going to go unanswered for a while, and I think that in itself will answer it. I don't think there is a lot of consistency from these two guys, at least not yet. It's something that the secondary certainly has to sort out, and like you said, it wouldn't surprise me if Kevin King starts taking away snaps from these guys pretty quickly.
I think he's a starter in the nickel. I think that's been determined today, and I think he'll start there, and it'll be Randall and Rollins splitting time at the slot.
With House on the other
side. House on the outside, yeah. And I wouldn't even be surprised to see Hawkins getting a little bit of action, too. Just maybe not so much this week, but if they have to play, when they play on turf again, you know, they could have used his speed today. And you know what? I thought to myself during this game, I wonder if Ladarius Gunter would have helped in this game. Even though he's not very fast, but he would have competed. I think he competed harder than some of what we saw today.
I don't disagree with that.
His size might have helped a little bit.
I don't disagree with that at all. No, it's definitely something that, you know, bears watching over the next couple of weeks, because as we said on the podcast the other day, Gunter might not have the physical attributes that, you know, a Demarius Randle has, certainly not the ball skills, certainly not the speed, but I don't think there's any doubt he plays harder than any of those corners based on what he did last season. So we'll have to see how it plays out. Anything else you want to touch on from this game before we try and get an hour of sleep?
Yeah, what else? I thought the safeties were non-existent. I don't remember them making very many plays whatsoever. Now, you know, Clinton Dix had to stand deep on Julio Jones, so that kind of takes him out of a lot of things. But we already mentioned, you know, Bryce didn't play very well.
And Burnett's best plays came in coverage from that nitro position.
Yes. Beyond that, I think this is a game the Packers want to – I think they need to really digest it and really go over it, but then they got to move on because you don't want this thing hanging as a cloud over your head.
But tomorrow morning you can all digest this podcast. You can listen to it 2, 3, 4 times if you want.
Yeah. And if you want to retch after it, that's fine too, you know. need to do that after the watching the game and then rehashing it with us, please do. Just go right ahead.
And we'll have a new podcast for you in the middle of the week. So we expect that if you retch tomorrow, you can listen to another one later.
Yeah, you can retch, you can kvetch, you can do whatever you want. Just get over it eventually.
All right, Tom and I have to try and get some sleep before our flights back to Wisconsin. So thank you guys very much for listening. Be sure to check out all of our coverage on JS Online and PackersNews.com. And with that, we will talk to you soon.
2, 3, 4, tell me one, Demonic, what are you waiting for?
To the hip, hop, the hippie to the hippie, the hip, hip, a hopper, you don't stop. Rock it to the bang, bang, the boogie, say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to bead. Well, skittle bee bop, we rock a Scooby-Doo. And guess what, America, we love you. Because you're rocking and rolling with us so much so. You can rock to your